Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone, and welcome to the Rider Rumblings video podcast. I'm here, as always, with Murray McCormick, the Rough Riders beat writer. Well, he's not the Rough Riders beat writer. He's a leader post beat writer covering the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And we are discussing, well, we have two things to discuss. The Rough Riders defeated the Hamilton Tiger Cats 30-13 on Saturday at Mosaic Stadium. And they are now preparing for Saturday's game in Edmonton against the Elks. Murray will be there. I'll be watching on TV with my dog, Candy, who is trying to crash the podcast. You might see part of her there. We're going to kind of split this into two halves. First, we're going to talk about what we saw on Saturday, and then we're going to talk about what we might see this coming Saturday and what we might hear coming up to this coming Saturday. Candy is making another appearance. There's her tail. Murr, what did you make of the game on Saturday against Hamilton?
Well, Cody Fajardo kind of nailed it right in the top when he said tale of two halves, kind of a boring, you know, take us back to 2021 kind of first half with the Riders with shorter passes and not a whole lot of offense to a wide open, exciting, thrilling. Even my mom called. My 9-year-old mom watched the second half and loved it. And she said it was just exciting football. Loved the way it ended. And it was, I know, even as it was probably one of the more enjoyable games to watch because of so many ticks, twists and turns. And then, I have to admit, I'm a defensive guy. I like seeing good, strong defense. And the Riders played amazing defense in that game, Rob. I know you're going to look at it a little bit longer than that, but what a defensive outing. Like 8 sacks, 5 turnovers, and they dominated. They literally dominated that game. And good for them because they kind of needed it while the offense got going. But kind of jumping on board with the offense is a little early to jump on board with one game. But, you know, they showed a lot of promise in that second half. And that pass that Cody dropped in the bucket to Shaq Evans on the sideline there was just pure beauty. And that's, I don't think a lot of people are, don't think we're giving, well, I think we're getting a lot of credit for it, but I really think that was just such a beauty of a pass. And it pretty well ignited them for the second half, didn't it, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, it was their first possession of the second half. And on first down, Cody Fajardo had run for 6 yards. So there they were in a 2nd-and-4 situation. And both Hamilton and Saskatchewan were 0-for-4. In the first half, when they were second down with 4 or fewer yards to go, and so that was their bugaboo in the first half. That was both teams' bugaboo in the first half, was a failure to convert 2nd and short. And so here they are in 2nd and 4, and they didn't try to throw short to get the 4 yards. They went over the top to Shaq Evans, who got nicely behind Jamal Roll and made the catch nicely in bounds. And I don't think Cody Fajardo has thrown a nicer pass. As a member of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He threw, actually, you know what? In practice last week, I believe it was Wednesday, he let loose with this bomb down the left sideline to Shaq Evans. And there was lots of oohing and aahing on the field and even among media types watching practice Wednesday. And I was like, oh, yeah, that looks like 2019. And here they are in the game and they pull off a long bomb down the left sideline for 41 yards that got the offense rolling, made the game interesting. The Rough Riders still didn't score a touchdown until 3 minutes remained in the game. But that was the pass to Evans was the first of 3 completions of 20-plus yards in the 3rd quarter for the Rough Riders. And then in the 4th quarter, they had 3 more of them. So they had 6 completions of 20-plus yards in that game. And it took them until week 5 of last season to have that many completions of 20-plus yards. So that was all basically the first, you know, 35% of last season was compressed into the second half of the first game of the year. It just came out of nowhere. And I think you got to give some credit at some point to Jason Moss, who's taken a lot of bullets during his year plus as a Riders offensive coordinator. Well, actually 2.5 years when you go back to December of 2019 when he was hired. But they obviously made some interesting adjustments and productive adjustments in the first half. And that's my dog's squeaky toy, in case you're wondering. I thought it was either Murray's hip making those noises or the dog's squeaky toy, but it is the dog. Well,
we've talked about the offense. We've talked about the defense. We've got a little chat. Let's get a little love to the special teams.
Like some of the special teams. They have no return game.
They have absolutely none. Yeah, I know that.
They had still, no return game in that one game.
Yeah. Brett Lowther was perfect. How much more can you ask them? And Corey Vedic, he set him up with great field position. Vedic set up with great field position. Like, you know, the return game is a concern. Like, holy smokes, I didn't see either anybody out there that made it say it's incapable. Well, it's incapable hands. I don't think there's anybody capable of explosions or anything yet. But maybe I'll take.
I think it's a return game across the league. Wasn't that good in week one? And there were decent punt returns here and there. None of them by the Rough Riders. Kickoff returns. The longest kickoff return across the league in week one was 31 yards or 33 yards.
Yeah.
Jamal Morrow had two kickoff returns for 27 yards. Ideally, you're getting one kickoff return for 27 yards. There just didn't seem to be much explosiveness, but Jamal Morrow showed last season he's a good returner. They didn't return kicks with any real adeptness. And they fumbled away one of them too on the opening play of the second half. So, that needs to be addressed, but I don't think Jamal Morrow is going to be a liability as a returner.
No. But, and it says Brett Lowther deserved credit for that. Like 5 for 5, kept him in the game, outscored the Tiger Cats.
Yeah.
What more can you ask?
Some of the kicks didn't have a real degree of difficulty to them, but
still
got to
make them, Rob. Still got to make them. A little difference with the narrower hash marks, too, which I kind of think makes it a little easier because it reduces the angles they're kicking at. They're kind of more straight down the middle. So maybe that's.
No, you remember, too. I mean, it was a tight game for a long duration, and Hamilton had a field goal attempt hit an upright at the end of the first half. So at that point, I mean, it should have been a tie game going into the dressing room. But Hamilton missed the field goal. The Riders didn't. And that gave the Riders a narrow lead going into halftime. So yeah, Brett Lowther is just, he's you know, we've seen this act before with someone named Ridgeway, and Brett Lowther is approaching that level of reliability. I'm not sure we'll ever see Dave Ridgeway type reliability again. When you look at how good he was, how proficient he was, and for the duration. But Brett Lowther, I can't think of a Rider kicker other than Dave Ridgeway who's been that reliable. Paul McCallum's best kicking was done elsewhere. Luca Congi had some pretty good years. Chris Melo had one really good year, etc. But Brett Lothar's now strung together. His 2019 season was a disappointment, but when he had to make a big kick in 2019, he made every pressure kick he had to make. And 2018, he was money. 2021, he was Brett Lowther again. So we're seeing the way this is trending. Yeah, you're right. I think he does deserve some credit.
So where are we trending after this game, Rob? Are we trending, let's plan the parade, or are we trending, let's see what happens next?
Well, it's one game. I mean, in 2014, they beat Hamilton in the regular season opener at Mosaic Stadium. They won 31-10. And that season was going really nicely. They were 8-2, and then Darian Durant got hurt, and you could flush the entire season away. In 1985, the Riders blew Ottawa completely out of Taylor Field, had a pile of sacks that day, and they ended up with having a miserable season. So, you know, but that wasn't a very good Ottawa team. I think that was a good Hamilton team that the Rough Riders beat, and we saw, you know, evidence that Hamilton still has a very good defense, and the Rough Riders eventually solved it.
Yeah, I thought Hamilton's offensive line would be a little better than it was, or maybe I didn't think the Riders' defensive line could be that good, but they had pressure on Dane Evans almost that whole game.
And it wasn't just the defensive line. I mean, they had 8 sacks. 5 of them were by linebackers. I mean, 5 of them were by defensive linemen, and then Mike Edom had a sack. I mean, that Adam sack was a pretty important sack, and they got pressure from everywhere, and they'd open up blitzing opportunities, and they did so many things to wreak havoc. And AC Leonard, there was one play he just kind of pushed Chris Van Zyl away with his hand and went in and snuffed out a play, you know, and this is an offensive lineman who's probably going to end up in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. And
Charleston Hughes got a sack too, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, kind of a sack. I mean, it was right at the end of the game. It's sometimes those forced fumble sacks aren't necessarily formal sacks. You know, they aren't in the truest sense because the quarterback was never tackled. They just knocked the ball out of his hand. And it was in kind of a, you know, meaningless situation. But Riders used Charleston Hughes well. He played, except for Nicholas Daly, he played the fewest snaps of any Rough Rider defensive lineman, just under 50% of them. I think it was 46% I calculated. But they're being very calculating in how they're using Charleston Hughes, and they're going to be able to get the most out of a 38-year-old player because of that.
But, and you look at and you look at the linebackers, the way they played, like,
oh my goodness.
You know, you look at Sankey's numbers and Moncrief's numbers, they're not mind blowing, but they were so dominant. Then Larry Dean,
Moncrief had that pick.
Moncrief had that pick, and the, I was looking at the defensive tackles. Mike Edom had 8 and Larry Dean had 7. What a great game for Larry Dean. Like, just, I was, we're a little worried that he could make that move from middle linebacker to Will with Micah Tights out for a while, but I don't think there's any concerns there right now. Like, the way,
no, I mean, Larry Dean's leading the league after week one, and he was in on more defensive plays than anybody else in the league, 11. Yeah. And I'm not sure where this new hash mark rule, where with the composition of their linebacking core, had there not been an injury, where would they have put Micah Tights anyway? Because how do you sit Sankey, Moncrief, or Larry Dean? I'm not sure that's a problem or a situation they wouldn't have faced even if Micah Tights had been healthy, because how do you park any of them on the sidelines? That's probably as good a linebacking core potentially as since the 1970s when they had Cleveland Van, Bill Manchuk, and Roger Goree. That's how good this linebacking core is. All three of them are in the Plaza of Honor.
And that's after one game. Like, just imagine what they're going to do this weekend. What kind of havoc they can wreak.
They should have some fun playing against Edmonton, shouldn't they?
What do we do? How do you handicap or even, like, you and I, we both looked up and saw it was 40-something after the first. It was the score after the first half. Some crazy wild
41 to something. I wasn't paying much attention because I was trying to get my writing done, and you were trying to get your story done. But I don't think the Edmonton Elks were paying much attention either.
No, and Chris Jones, things started slowly that first season he was here too. But I don't remember.
They didn't get caked like that.
Not like that.
And right out of the gate.
And I missed it. And I meant to tape the game. I guess he did a halftime interview. And let's give the guy credit. His butt's getting handed to him. And he still does his responsibilities. Now, would the old Chris Jones maybe blown them off? Maybe. I've seen a number of interviews with Chris this year that is quite open and candid about things. So maybe he's gotten a little softer in his time, or maybe that game.
I mean, the Chris Jones we thought we were getting when he came to Saskatchewan, based upon what had been his history in Edmonton, there had been a bit of a frosty relationship with the media there. And I never really had problems dealing with Chris Jones. There were a couple of times when he just would flatly refuse to answer a question. There were times he would get a little testy, but they all do. I mean, Ken Miller was probably the nicest head coach to deal with ever, and that's the head coach who screamed at me during we didn't scream at me, he just got very mad at me. Chris Jones never blew his top in dealing with the media in Saskatchewan, and he always had things to say, and he was accessible and was candid. I enjoyed dealing with Chris Jones when he was here. I mean, that's where the moderately successful comment about Darian Durant came from. It was a sit down with Chris Jones. Mm. And this kind of segues into, I guess, the second half of where we're going, but looking ahead to the Edmonton game. But I'm an old wrestling fan, and what's a wrestling match without a villain? And I think you need some heat, and Chris Jones gives the CFL that kind of heat and that kind of, you know, the almost Don Matthews like persona. Mm-hmm. And I think the league needs characters like that. I mean, it's Chris Jones and the Edmonton Elks. It's not the Edmonton Elks right now. And that's, it's when there's that sort of aura around someone, that mystique, whether it's good or bad, I think that creates interest, and the league doesn't really do a lot to build characters. And Chris Jones is a character. He's a presence. Love him or hate him, you know that Chris Jones is in Edmonton, and that becomes a focal point for a lot. And I don't think he minds it, because he also knows that it takes a lot of pressure off his players.
I think that's true. And I think he kind of gets the media a little bit. He kind of understands. He just doesn't want to. And when I've said this before, a long, long time ago, I realized Chris Jones realizes the media can't help him win a game. So he's kind of treats us. I felt that's where we got treated, like we were there as Congress, but he's still going to do what he's got to do to win a game. And I think that's what Chris's personality is like. And I never really got to know him. You know that I never really had. I had like one or two one-on-ones with him, and I never really got to, other than scrums and things. So that's one of those you'd like to get on, because he's led such a fascinating life. He's done so many things, and good or bad, and I think we're going to have to see what he can do this weekend as a coach. And how does he get his guys, who we spent, all the offseason kind of pumping up, to get pumped up again after that whooping. I don't know
how. Well, sometimes a game like that can do it for you. I mean, there's nowhere to hide after a game like that. And stranger things have happened. I remember in 1986, I went to Winnipeg, and the Riders lost 56-0 in Winnipeg. And then they beat Winnipeg in the Labor Day Classic that year. So you can go from 56-0 to beating them a few weeks later. Now, this is back-to-back, but sometimes that can be an ornery foe. And those are tough games to prepare for psychologically, because a team gets caked 59-15, and you've just beaten a good Hamilton Tiger Cats team. I think you need a sports psychologist as well as a head coach this week to make sure you go into that game with the right frame of mind.
Right. Just take us back to the last weekend's game, Rob. Attendance, you were very curious to see how many people were going to be in seats. What's your assessment of what we saw on Saturday night?
Well, you know, I could go off in so many tangents with this because I'm a nerd. They announced 28,002 as a paid attendance. I talked to Craig Reynolds yesterday. The Riders Grey Cup tickets go on sale Tuesday, or went on sale Tuesday at 10 a.m. So that was the premise for the conversation, but we actually branched off into talking a bit about Riders attendance as it pertained to the Saturday game against Hamilton. And he said about 24,000 people were actually in the stadium out of the 28,000 paid. And the vast majority of the people who weren't there, it was a rural, the people who weren't there were no shows. They know where those people come from. And virtually all of them were from rural Saskatchewan, which means farming and which means gas prices. So, I still think whether it's 24,000 or 28,000, that's not necessarily a bad crowd when you consider everything that's happened. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it looks kind of worse than it is sometimes too, because a lot of the fans are able to mingle and that creates some empty seats, which doesn't necessarily translate into people not being there. But, a couple of frames of reference, I'm going to write about that later this week, but the 1993 Rider home opener against Edmonton. Riders had a good team. Don Matthews was a head coach. Ken Austin was a quarterback. Ray Algard, Glenn Suter, Jeff Fairholm, Bobby Juris, and the whole bit. Really good Rider team, coached by Don Matthews, playing against an Edmonton team that was coached by Ron Lancaster. And the Riders got 17,000 for their home opener. Mm-hmm. So compared to a paid attendance of 28,000, I remember in 79, October 28th, the first time Taylor Field was sold out since expansion, they got 28,012 people. I remember looking and thinking, I never thought I'd see the day when 28,000 people would go to a Rider game. Well, here we are. They sold 28,200 tickets for the home opener, and it's being picked apart. And I'm one of the picker aparters, so I'm not deflecting that criticism. But I think all things considered, it wasn't a bad crowd. They got 30,000 they sold out their first home game last year, but there hadn't been any football for 2 years. The year before it was 30,000. The year before that, it was 29,900 or 29,800. So it's not too far off what they'd like it to be in terms of paid attendance.
The tournament attendance, everyone I've talked to have had a blast at that game. They all said it was so much fun. It was so much loud. There's so much partying going on and walking around. And
so much elbow room. Sorry. So much elbow room.
Yeah. But we have to mention that. And I know it happens to Winnipeg too, that people see lots of empty seats and they assume there's nobody there. This is the Rum Hut area down at one of the end zones. It's just jam-packed. And that's where the people go. Just like Pill Country. Pill Country gets very filled because it's a social thing. It's not like you and I go in our football games. We're in our seats for the opening kickoff, break at halftime, back in the second half. We don't sort of use it as a social thing. We're there to watch football. More and more people are there to have a social time, to go to AGT Lounge and have a great meal and then sit and chat and stuff. So it's not – the focus isn't entirely on football anymore. It's more on the bigger picture. And I think that's something we have to adjust to, because it may look like there's nobody in the stands, but there are people there. Do you know what I mean by that?
There were still almost 10,000 vacant seats, no matter how you stack at 33,350 seats, and there were about 24,000 there. So there are almost 10,000 vacant seats. So that's
great. That's money
taken into consideration as well. But again, I look at these gas prices and sometimes that's a deterrent to drive up to Uplands. It's a deterrent. You know, I'm going to the Regina Red Sox game tonight, and I'm thinking, how much is it going to cost me to get from South Regina to Curry Field with gas prices? Now, what if you're coming in for a Rider game from Saskatoon, from Prince Albert, from North Battleford? What if you're Govan coming in from Calgary? I mean, my goodness, it's quite the expenditure. I'm going out to Kelowna in September for my godson's wedding, and I figure it's going to cost me between $400 and $500 of gas to get to it from Kelowna. Now, that's a one-time there and back, granted an extended distance, but now you're a season ticket holder in Saskatoon, you got to do that 9 times. You're a season ticket holder in Prince Albert, you got to do that 9 times for like 4 meaningful regular season games. That's quite the price tag. So the gas will cost you more than your game ticket. And so that has to be factored in. I'm sure there'll be some Rider fans driving to Edmonton for the game this weekend, though. Riders always travel well. What are you expecting on Saturday in Edmonton? You'll be there. I'll be in my recliner with my dog.
I would be very surprised if we saw another outing like from the Elks we did on against the Lions. I have a feeling Chris Jones is going to have them back playing a little better. I still think the Riders are a better team. Their quarterback situation's far more settled than what's going on in Edmonton. And I anticipate the Riders to keep building. I think Cody is going to build off of that second half and not from the first half. And just, I assume it's another strong Rider performance based on that. And the Elks playing a little better on that Saturday night. Because they still, can you believe they didn't win a game at home last year? Like, I know it's a truncated season, but can you ever imagine Edmonton going without a win at home?
That Edmonton team, that's not surprising, but it's going to be interesting because I'm sure it's one of those games where Edmonton, I mean, everybody's writing them off already, and you've got a head coach and defensive strategist who's got all sorts of neat ideas. So that's going to be a test for the Rough Riders because who knows who Chris Jones is going to be sending and from where.
Yeah.
And so whereas Hamilton's, I think, defense is a lot more conventional, they're a lot more reliant on traditionally the front four, and they've got Simone Lawrence. You kind of know what Hamilton's going to do defensively. Edmonton is a bit of a clean slate, and you got Chris Jones, this mad scientist defensively, and he might send one guy, he might send everybody but the equipment manager. You don't know. Yeah. And so that's going to be an interesting test for the Rough Riders up front too. You know, their pass protection was terrific on Saturday. They didn't, not only did the Riders get 8 sacks, they didn't allow one. And very rarely was Cody Fajardo pressured. There were a couple of times when Dylan Wynn created a bit of heat, but that's what Dylan Wynn is going to do. For the most part, Logan Ferland handled Dylan Wynn really well. Now with Edmonton, they're just going to be, I mean, again, it's Chris Jones, it's the mad scientist, and it's going to create some issues for them pass protection wise because of the sheer unpredictability of what they do. So that'll be an interesting test for the Riders' offensive line. Can they keep Cody Fajardo clean for a second week in a row? Or does Chris Jones opt to say, because Cody also likes to get rid of the ball really quickly, does Chris Jones opt to say, well, we might not be able to get to him anyway because a lot of their throws are delivered in 1.5, 1.2 seconds. So do they hang back in coverage and go with a 3-man rush and 9-man coverage and just dare Cody Fajardo to be precise underneath, or dare him to try and go over the top as he did successfully against Hamilton when they've got people hanging back? Do the Riders have to guard against being greedy depending upon what Chris Jones does? If he tries to zing him with the blitz, we've seen what Cody Fajardo can do. That pass to Jacob Prawl for 33 yards into when they read the blitz, Jacob Prawl ran the post, 33-yard gain. So they've shown they can beat the blitz with Cody Fajardo quarterbacking. Hamilton didn't really blitz, I think, as much as Chris Jones could or might. So there's going to be a bit of a, I think it's going to be a little bit less predictable what the Riders are facing. How do they deal with that?
Do you think the Riders dodged a bullet on that hit by Simone Lawrence on?
Oh, absolutely.
And I've watched that shot.
I don't think that was a flagrant hit. I really don't. I mean, that was, Cody wasn't sliding feet first, and that was a lot more bang bang than the Zach Collaros hit that opened the 2019 season. Was it worth a penalty? Yeah, but I don't think there was a clear, I don't think there was clear malice or an intent to injure. I think that's just somebody playing hard and the timing didn't work out in his favor. I didn't really have a lot of issue to take with that hit.
I think it's Simone Lawrence, though. It's Simone.
That's the thing.
You love him as a defensive player. He's a tackler. He covers everything. He does everything well. He just plays on that edge, goes over the line some days. And I don't know how he pulls up from that one because you said Cody dove.
Yeah, that was really bang, bang. Now, could there have been less of a blow up high? Possibly. But again, you're talking a split-second decision in a game that's being played quickly. and aggressively. Mer, we got to pretty much wrap up here. Any final words? I make that sound like a eulogy. Anything you'd like to say, in closing before you prepare for the next 65 years of your life?
Nothing.
Did I spin out of that one okay?
I think the CFL trotted out a pretty good weekend to kick things off other than the BC game. And even lots of people watched the end of that one.
The BC game, Nathan Rourke, 23 for 29. 7 carries for 78 yards. Like, my goodness, that was amazing. Anyway,
sorry. Good weekend for the CFL, and good to see Candy. Haven't seen her since.
Always isn't she cute? Oh, there's my pup.
If I could ever get my cats to leave the basement, I'd show them my cats, but they don't like to have anything to do with podcasts.
Oh, she's so cute. Candy and I are going to sign off now with the regular sign off. Aren't you cute? If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. It helps us grow the podcast or the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. Don't yawn, Candy. It's exciting stuff. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email Rob at rvanstone@postmedia.com. Candy doesn't yet have an email address, and we'll read it on the show. You can follow me, Rob, on Twitter at Rob Vanstone, or Murray at Murray LP. And don't send Murray Mandrick emails or texts or, pardon me, Twitter tweets at Murray LP. That's Murray McCormick's address. That is a request for the day. We don't need people commenting on Scott Moe or Ryan Miley or the NDP on at Murray LP. That's a primarily a football Twitter account, right?
Right. Right. And food. We get back in the food.
Yes, absolutely. So for... we'll do this again next week. I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about after the Edmonton game. There's a million angles. Murray's going to Edmonton this week, and I'm looking forward to what he's got to say in conversation with Chris Jones and what he hears in return. So for Murray McCormick, for my beautiful Candy, I'm Rob Vanstone, and we will do this again. And for Austin Davis, our producer, and Creedon Martell, we will do this next week. Thanks so much for your time today, and take care.